All right, welcome back everyone for another deep dive. Last time we were together, we really got into the nuts and bolts of personnel development, right? We dug deep into training, career advancement, all that good stuff, even got a bit into the nitty-gritty of how jobs are designed.
Yeah, definitely hit all those key foundational elements.
Absolutely. So today we're going to kind of keep that momentum going, all right? We're moving on to the next big piece of the puzzle. We're tackling chapter five. And this one, well, it's all about this fascinating intersection, right? Between diversity management, cross-cultural management, and then, of course, corporate culture.
Yeah, this chapter is really insightful. I mean, it kind of throws out this idea that these three things are just these separate, isolated aspects of personal development. It really brings home the point that they're all deeply intertwined, totally connected.
Right from the start, the chapter goes after this common assumption that, just having a mix of people in a company just by itself, like magically leads to good things.
Yeah, like diversity is this automatic win-win.
Exactly. But what the chapter points out is that, like, in the real world, you see this all the time, whether it's company mergers, teams where everyone comes from different backgrounds, or even those big international collaborations.
Right, the kind where you're working across different countries and continents.
Yeah, exactly. What often happens is that diversity, especially in the beginning, it can lead to some bumps in the road, like some real friction, some disagreements, even some conflict.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. The chapter emphasizes how that initial phase, when you bring diverse groups together, it can be super dynamic, but not always in a way that feels smooth and easy, right? It even brings up this really interesting phenomenon. It's called the glass cliff. You familiar with that one?
Vaguely.
Okay, so it basically describes this thing where women, and I'm simplifying here, but they sometimes find themselves disproportionately appointed to leadership positions. But the catch is, it's often in situations that are already really high risk.
Oh, I see. So, like, the company's already teetering on the edge.
Exactly. And so even if it seems like it's like this progressive move, promoting a woman to a leadership role, it can actually have some unintended negative consequences, right? It can almost reinforce stereotypes if things go
Yeah.
south. And that's a point the chapter really hammers home, just taking these like superficial actions, it's just not enough when it comes to diversity.
Which brings us to the real heart of the chapter's argument, the absolute necessity of what they call, systematic diversity management.
Yeah, it's a whole different way of thinking about it.
Totally. It's saying it's not just about having a diverse workforce, it's about being proactive, It's about actively managing and nurturing that diversity in a way that actually unlocks its true potential.
I think the word systematic is key there, right?
Yeah.
It has to be thoughtful.
Totally agree. So it can't just be random or haphazard. It has to be a deliberate system.
Yeah, absolutely. And to do that effectively, like this chapter says, you need more than just a surface level understanding. You really have to dig deep into what diversity actually means, like in all its complexity. You
Right.
got to be aware of the challenges that come with it, for sure, but also those huge opportunities it brings, both for, the company hitting its goals and for making sure every employee feels supported, feels like their needs and interests are valued.
So you're saying it has to be good for the company and good for the people.
Yeah, finding that balance, that's the sweet spot.
Exactly. Now, the chapter doesn't just stop at managing diversity within like one company, right? It also dives into this like ever-growing importance of cross-cultural management, which, I mean, in today's world, that's
I mean,
huge.
think about it. Markets are becoming so global. Workplaces are more interconnected than ever. It's like the world's shrinking in a way.
Totally. And
Yeah.
that means you've got employees, partners, clients, everyone's constantly interacting with people from all these different cultural backgrounds. It's amazing.
Yeah, and the chapter makes the case that to thrive in that kind of environment, you absolutely have to be able to navigate cultural differences, leverage those differences. It's not just a nice to have anymore. It's like a make or break skill for any organization that wants to be successful.
So understanding all those different communication styles, how teams work differently in different cultures, even how business is done, like the whole etiquette of it, that's all part of this, right?
Exactly. You got to be aware of how those differences can impact, well, basically everything, how you communicate, how teams work together, and even the bottom line, like whether a company ultimately succeeds or not.
Fascinating stuff. Now, the last big piece this chapter tackles is the role of corporate culture. And this is where things get really interesting, I think. It looks at how a company's culture, like its personality, acts as this unifying force, right?
right? Kind of sets the stage.
Exactly. It shapes how people behave, how they interact, and ultimately, you know, it ends up influencing the organization's overall performance. I mean, that's powerful stuff.
And the chapter doesn't shy away from showing how these diversity initiatives and all those cross-cultural management efforts, they don't exist in a vacuum. You know, they're happening within the context of a company's culture, and they're influenced by it. It's like a two-way street.
So you're saying a company's culture can either make these initiatives work better or it can hold them back.
Exactly. You know, if you've got a strong culture, a culture that's truly inclusive, it can actually amplify the positive effects of diversity, right? It's like a fertile ground where those differences can flourish. But on the flip side, if a company's culture isn't really supportive, if it's not conducive to these kinds of changes, even the most carefully planned programs might struggle to make a real impact.
So it's not enough to just have a program on paper. You really need the whole company, especially the leadership, to be on board, right?
That's the key takeaway, I think. It all goes back to culture.
Okay, so in this deep dive, our goal is to break this chapter down, get those core insights out, and then really try to help everyone understand why taking this strategic, like, well-thought-out approach to managing diversity, navigating cross-cultural interactions, and, of course, understanding a company's culture, why all of that is absolutely critical.
Especially in the world of personnel development.
Right? Absolutely. So we're going to be unpacking those key concepts and then, you know, really trying to explore, like, what are the real-world implications? How does this all translate into action?
And I think what's so important about this chapter is, like you said, it challenges that common assumption that diversity automatically equals success. You know, it explains why having a system, having a process for managing diversity is absolutely essential. And you brought up mergers and teams with people from all different backgrounds. Those are perfect examples.
Oh, totally. Because if you just throw a bunch of people together who have different ways of working, different communication styles, different approaches to problem solving, you can end up with, well, a mess.
Yeah, chaos. And, you know, the chapter talks about how those differences can be really deeply rooted in people's backgrounds, their experiences. So if there's no framework in place to help people understand those differences, to bridge those gaps, misunderstandings are bound to happen, inefficiencies creep in, and yeah, conflict becomes almost inevitable.
Makes sense. Now, what about this glass cliff thing? Can you give us another example of that? I mean, how could that play out in a real world setting?
Oh, for sure. Imagine you've got a company that's, you know, going through a rough patch. Maybe they're on the verge of some major restructuring or they're facing some really tough financial decisions. And in that situation, they decide to appoint a woman to the CEO position, right? On the surface, it might look like a great step forward for gender equality.
Yeah, finally a woman at the helm.
Exactly. But if the company's already in a precarious position and, you know, this new CEO doesn't manage to turn things around, it can actually backfire. It can reinforce the stereotype that, oh, you know, maybe women aren't quite cut out for those top leadership roles, especially in crisis situations. And that can make it even harder for other women to break through that glass ceiling in the future. It's a tough situation, and it's why the chapter emphasizes that you have to go beyond just optics, beyond just making symbolic gestures. Real change requires a deeper level of understanding.
Okay, so let's dig into this idea of, you know, systematic diversity management. What are some of the fundamental ideas, those kind of sensitivities that the chapter talks about as being essential for doing it right? Like, how do you actually create this system that works?
Well, the chapter kind of suggests that you have to move beyond just saying, oh, yeah, we all recognize that people are different. It's about truly understanding those differences, right? It's about understanding all those different dimensions of diversity, whether it's gender, ethnicity, age, you know, sexual orientation, disability, even differences in the way people think, their cognitive styles, the kind of experiences they've had. It's about acknowledging that each person bring something unique to the table.
So it's about recognizing that these differences, they're not just about checking boxes.
Right. It's not just about having a certain percentage of women, a certain percentage of people from different ethnic backgrounds. It's about truly valuing those diverse perspectives, seeing them as an asset, and then finding ways to actually integrate those perspectives into the fabric of the organization.
So it's a shift in mindset, you're saying?
Absolutely. It's about valuing those differences.
And not just saying you value them, but actually demonstrating that you value them.
Right. Like, it has to be embedded in everything the company does. You know, and the chapter also talks about this idea of sensitivity. And that means recognizing that, you know, we all have biases, whether we're aware of them or not, and those biases can sneak into our decisions, our interactions, and how we treat people at work. So effective diversity management, it involves creating a culture and environment where everybody, regardless of their background, feels valued, feels respected, and has a fair shot at contributing and moving up in the company.
So that's the ideal. But then the chapter also acknowledges that diversity isn't always easy, right?
Right, right. Like, you know, sometimes it can lead to more misunderstandings or even conflict if it's not managed well.
So it's about being prepared for those challenges.
Exactly. It's about proactively creating a culture where those challenges can be addressed constructively.
Okay, so we've talked about diversity management. Let's move on to this idea of cross-cultural management. Now, the chapter really emphasizes how this is becoming more and more important, right?
Yeah, with globalization and all. Mm.
So what are some of the key areas where these cultural differences, you know, they really tend to have a big impact in today's workplace, especially a global one?
Oh, communication is a big one.
Like just talking to each other.
Yeah, like the way people communicate can vary so much from one culture to another. Like think about directness. You know, some cultures are really direct. Others beat around the bush more. Then there's formality. Some cultures are super formal. Others are much more relaxed. And even nonverbal cues like eye contact, body language, all that stuff can mean totally different things in different cultures. What might seem assertive in one culture could be considered rude in another, or the opposite, right? Like a lack of directness could be seen as, I don't know, dishonest or evasive.
So even a simple thing like giving feedback to an employee, that could be a minefield if you're not aware of those cultural differences.
Totally. I mean, there are cultures where feedback is expected to be very direct, even critical, and it's totally fine to give that feedback publicly in front of others.
Wow, that's so different from like here.
Right. But then there are other cultures where it's really important to be much more indirect, to start with the positives, you know, and then maybe give any constructive criticism in private. Understanding those nuances is key. Otherwise, you risk damaging relationships, hindering people's development, all that.
So cross-cultural communication, it's like its own language you have to learn.
In a way, yeah.
Okay, what other areas are affected by these cultural differences?
Teamwork's another one, a big one. Different cultures have different ideas about how teams should function. Some cultures emphasize individual contributions. Others are all about collective effort. Then you have differences in how decisions are made, how disagreements are handled. You know, what might seem like a really efficient, collaborative way of working in one culture could feel chaotic, even disrespectful in another.
Like stepping on toes without even realizing it.
Yeah, totally.
And I imagine leadership styles probably come into play here too, right?
Well, absolutely. I mean, think about it. Different cultures have different views on authority, hierarchy, and what makes a good leader. A leadership style that might be super effective in one culture could be seen as totally ineffective or even autocratic in another. Leaders who work across different cultures really need to be adaptable, you know, and they need this thing called cultural intelligence, which is basically the ability to understand and navigate different cultural contexts. Like, I know the chapter talks about how in some cultures, a leader is expected to be very directive, give clear instructions, be very top-down, while in other cultures, a more collaborative, empowering approach where the leader facilitates and encourages participation is seen as much more effective.
That's fascinating. So in this globalized world, it's not just about overcoming those language barriers. It's about understanding those deeper, like, cultural norms, right? Those unspoken rules that really shape how people interact and work together.
Yeah, you gotta be aware of what those are.
So when we talk about cross-cultural management, it's not just about avoiding those potential problems, right? It's also about being able to see those differences as a source of strength, a way to get new ideas, new solutions.
Right. Different cultural perspectives can bring so much to the table. Mm-hmm. Fresh ideas, innovative solutions, and a much deeper understanding of those diverse global markets we were talking about.
So it's about harnessing that diversity, using it as a competitive advantage.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that means giving people the skills and knowledge they need, not only to avoid those pitfalls, but also to really capitalize on that richness that cultural diversity brings.
And that might involve things like, I don't know, training programs that focus on cultural awareness, building empathy, or even creating structures within an organization that are more inclusive of different cultural norms and expectations.
All of that.
Makes sense. All right, so let's shift gears one more time and focus on corporate culture. Now, the chapter really presents corporate culture as this kind of like underlying force that shapes how both diversity management and cross-cultural management play out within a company. Can you unpack that a bit? Like, how exactly does corporate culture influence these areas?
Well, think about it this way. A company's culture, it sets the tone for how diversity is perceived, how it's valued within the organization. If you have a culture that genuinely embraces openness, respects differences, promotes inclusion, that company is going to be way more successful in attracting, keeping, and really leveraging a diverse workforce. It just makes sense, right? In that kind of environment, employees from all sorts of backgrounds are going to feel welcome, supported, and empowered to really contribute their unique talents and perspectives.
So you're saying that culture is like the foundation?
Exactly. A strong, inclusive culture, it's like the bedrock for building successful diversity and cross-cultural initiatives.
So if the foundation is solid, you can build a strong structure on top of it.
Right. But if that foundation is weak, or if it's, you know, got cracks in it because of unconscious bias or resistance to change, then even the best efforts to promote diversity and inclusion might fall apart. You know, employees from different backgrounds might feel marginalized, their ideas might be overlooked, and the company might miss out on all the benefits that diversity can bring.
And how does corporate culture specifically affect cross-cultural management?
Oh, that's a great question. So a corporate culture can either help or hinder those cross-cultural interactions, right? Imagine a company that really values continuous learning and adaptability. That kind of culture is naturally going to encourage employees to develop cultural intelligence, to become skilled at working across different cultures. It'll foster open communication, make it easier for people from different backgrounds to collaborate effectively. The chapter might even give examples of companies that have a global mindset baked into their culture, you know, places where employees are encouraged to learn about other cultures, adapt their communication styles, all that.
So it's like that cultural intelligence is valued, it's rewarded.
Yeah, absolutely. But then, you know, you have companies where the culture is more, well, maybe more insular, more focused on doing things their way, the right way, without really recognizing or respecting that there are other ways of doing things, other cultural norms and practices. And in those companies, well, it's easy to see how that can lead to all sorts of problems, right? Misunderstandings, strained relationships, and ultimately failure in those global markets where they're trying to compete.
It's like they're shooting themselves in the foot. In a way.
Totally. They're missing out on those valuable insights that people from different cultures bring.
So it seems like diversity management, cross-cultural management, and corporate culture, they're all interconnected, right? Like you can't really address one without thinking about the others.
That's exactly what the chapter is saying. It's saying they're interdependent.
Huh.
So you've got to develop your strategies for managing diversity in a way that takes cultural differences into account. And then you've got to make sure that both of those things, diversity and cross-cultural management, are aligned with and supported by the overall corporate culture. If those pieces don't fit together, your efforts are going to be way less effective.
So what does all of this mean for people in leadership roles or those working in HR who are trying to create workplaces that are more inclusive, more effective?
Well, for starters, it means shifting away from seeing diversity as just a box to check. You know, it's not about just meeting some legal requirements or trying to hit certain numbers. It's about embracing the value that diverse perspectives bring and then creating a workplace culture where everyone feels like they belong, where everyone can contribute their best work, where everyone feels like they can succeed. And to make that happen, you need commitment from the top, from leadership.
And it's not just about changing policies, right? It's about changing that deeper culture.
Exactly. It's about examining those unspoken norms, those assumptions that might be holding people back. And it's about taking action. Like implementing inclusive hiring practices, providing training on diversity and cross-cultural communication, having clear codes of conduct that promote respect and inclusion, and constantly working to create a culture that values all those different perspectives and makes it easier for people from different cultures to work together effectively.
So this chapter really lays out a strong argument for why these three things, diversity management, cross-cultural management, and corporate culture, have to be considered together, right?
They're all part of the same puzzle when it comes to personnel development in today's world.
Yeah, you can't really separate them out.
It's about moving beyond just saying that differences exist and getting into the real work of figuring out how to leverage those differences, how to make them a strength for the company, and how to navigate those complex global interactions, all within the context of the company's culture.
That's a great way to put it. It's like a call to action. I think it's great food for thought, too. You know, as we go through the rest of the chapters, it would be interesting for everyone to kind of think about how these ideas apply to their own work, their own observations of different organizations. Have you seen examples where a company's lack of attention to diversity or cross-cultural issues or even its own culture has caused problems? Or maybe you've seen examples of companies that have really nailed these things. You know, they've really integrated diversity, cross-cultural awareness, and a strong culture, and it's led to amazing outcomes. I'd love to hear about those too.
Yeah, me too.
All right, so this chapter provides a really useful framework for analyzing what's happening in different companies, and it really gets beyond just talking about diversity in a vague, abstract way. It gets into the nitty-gritty of how to make it a real strength for an organization. So hopefully this deep dive has given everyone a clearer understanding of why this stuff matters, why it's so crucial for success in today's world.
And in our next deep dive, we'll move on to the next chapter in the book, and we'll keep exploring all these fascinating aspects of personnel development.
Looking forward to it.
Me too.
So thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you next time.
See you then.